Well, Thomas, just you and me this time, buddy.
Just you and me. Well, that's going to be a little lonely, I guess.
I don't think so. We've got some good stories to share. Welcome to Dutch, the podcast. My name is Mike, and there is Tom Byfoot. He is the publisher of everything at Mokum Publishing, including Dutch, the magazine, Dutch, the podcast, De Krant. He has the online digital version and an entire bookstore at Mokum Publishing. And Dutch the Media. And I'll recommend go to DutchTheMedia.com. Tom, today we're doing something kind of fun for me. I have become a little bit of a better
version. I'll tell you what you've become. No, you've become an honorary Dutchman, I think. How'd you feel about that?
Well, that feels great. That feels fantastic. I hope that my passport is honored as such when I reach the Netherlands.
Well, that's a different story. But look, we've been doing this now for a good two and a half years. We've put out 24 episodes. You've sat through every single one of them. You've listened, you've talked, you've added your input. So, yeah, I think that's a moniker we can give you this.
Okay, well, you know, I'm pleased to take it. And I've had a really good teacher because you've brought to my life and to many people's lives through this podcast, and it grows and grows. A couple of things. If you're a viewer or a listener, thank you. You've made a huge difference to the growth of the podcast, and we love your comments. Please be in touch. But what you've done, Tom, is you've given a layman like myself a really good understanding of what's important to Dutch people. What you eat in the Netherlands, where to go in the Netherlands, what the history of being Dutch really means in the modern sense. So thanks. I really appreciate it. And if I may say, you're an incredible interviewer, Tom. Thank you.
thank you for saying that, Mike. Now I hope I can come up with the right questions for you. But hey, let's also tell the listeners why we're doing this. You know, this is the end of our second series. When we first recorded our first two or three podcasts, we didn't even know where this was going to go. Well, by now we've done two full series of 12 episodes, and we're wrapping up our 24th episode, our second series, with this special broadcast where we haven't brought an outside guest to know. We're going to talk. You know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about, you say you've picked up a lot. Well, what did you learn about the Dutch in Canada, in North America, in the USA, about the Dutch in the Netherlands? You know, I'd be curious to know what your take is. And did you start from zero? Did you know anything beyond tulips and windmills when we first started doing this?
Did you leave wooden shoes out? But for some reason, I don't understand why clogs were left out.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're obviously learning. Before we do
well, that's a great question. That's a good question, Tom. The truth is, I had been to the Netherlands, and I loved it. And I've been twice now, and I love Amsterdam. I love Holland, and the riding a bike through the tulips, and almost getting killed as you step out of a shop because you didn't think to look left for a cyclist. But my knowledge really was what I learned in Canadian history here in school, which had a big Dutch influence because of what Canadians did in wartime. And of course, we touch on that throughout this series a number of times. That was really my knowledge base, Tom.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I'm actually impressed, and I'm happy that Canadian schools do talk about the role of the Canadian Army in the liberation of the Netherlands, because it's big and it's defined to a large extent the relationship between the two countries on a governmental level, but also on a personal level. There are so many friendships across the ocean between the Netherlands and Canada. And I think we've highlighted a few of those as well and how that's impacted. Now, what I was going to do before we carry on, I was going to say, if you want to pick up some Dutch atmosphere, some Dutch culture right here in Canada, there's this big Dutch street market planned in Vancouver on the Labor Day weekend. Now, after Labor Day, they'll do another one next year. This is an annual event. This is the second time. Last year, they had 40,000 people come. Dutch food, wow. Dutch music, Dutch DJs, Dutch party, And of course, Dutch the Media with our own stand will be there. Unfortunately, I can't make it myself this year, but we will be represented. So maybe we roll a quick video about the Dutch market, and then we'll start talking about what you know about the Netherlands.
All right, a little bit more on the Dutch market. We'll see you on the other side of that. Well, Tom. Okay, let's get this started. Let's roll back the episodes a little bit, and maybe we can, as we take a walk down memory lane, you can fill in the blanks, because the names won't come to me necessarily, but they will come to you because you spoke to each and every one of these people. But I, one of the things that I recall right out of the gate, you asked me what did I know about the Dutch, and what I was confused about the most was, why is it called Dutchland? Why is it called the Netherlands? And some people call it Holland. And so that had to be straightened. There was a lot of names that revolved around being Dutch. And once you unraveled those for me, I think I was ready to go.
Okay, yeah, that was our very first episode. I really enjoyed doing that. That got us on the road. And, you know, after that, we brought in, started bringing in guests, because that was one of only three episodes, including this one, that just the two of us did together.
Lucky for the viewers and listeners, but yeah, okay. So just in short, have you ever thought about how to in one sentence, this is a challenge, in one sentence, explain this to me.
You're challenging me to explain in one sentence.
Yeah, go right ahead. No pressure, Tom.
The Netherlands are a low-lying country. I can't do that in one sentence. I tell you something. I published a book about the Dutch in North America. We've talked about it regularly on the show. And I wrote an introduction about this for the book. And that introduction is 3 pages. So how am I to capture that in a sentence? Like, you've got people from Holland, you've got people from, well, Dutch sounds like Deutsch, right? It sounds like German. But we say German in English. Why don't we say Deutsch? Well, there's Low Dutch and High Dutch. But you know what I would suggest? Listen to our first episode, called Hollandish, maybe we should just start calling it Hollandish. It's just easier.
We just thought we were so clever with that name, didn't we? Well, it still sticks. We began. But I think what really caught my attention almost right away as we got down the road was we started talking about food. And I don't know about you, Tom, but that always gets my attention, mainly Indo-Dutch food.
Absolutely, and it's definitely a fusion cuisine. It's built around the Netherlands had a colony in Asia called the Dutch East Indies, now Indonesia, and a whole subculture developed there of mixed culture of Dutch and Indonesian people, customs, food. And a large diaspora of Dutch Indonesians still live in California and in the Netherlands and in Canada, but a very big concentration in California. And we spoke to a fellow from California, Jeff Keysbury, who owned a Dutch Indonesian restaurant in the Netherlands, while his mom did, who published several cookbooks about Dutch Indonesian food, and who spent an hour talking to us about Dutch Indonesian food. And I'm getting hungry and hungry, and I've got some of that stuff in my kitchen here. So what are we thinking about? Peanut sauce, satay, skewered. Well, we know what satay is, typical Indonesian dish. We have several rice dishes that we eat in the Netherlands that stem from the Dutch East Indies. But one typical combination of foods is called a rijsttafel. Literally, that means rice table. It's like almost like a smorgasbord of different dishes And that's very typical of the Dutch and Indonesian food. Every year around, I'm thinking about now, around about Mother's Day. Yeah, on Mother's Day, there's a big festival in Los Angeles where thousands of people come, where you can eat lots of lovely Dutch Indonesian food. So yeah, that's one of them. And you know, talk about fusion. Fries, French fries are a big thing in the Netherlands, but we don't eat them with vinegar or with ketchup. No, we typically eat them either with mayonnaise, which is one thing, or with Indonesian peanut sauce, satay sauce. Best fries you can get. I don't know, did you try them when you were in Amsterdam?
Do you think that this would be an apropos time for us to take a break? I just need to go to the kitchen for a second. I mean, this is the problem with these episodes, and we didn't stop there. I mean, what else is Dutch? Coleslaw? What? Donuts? I mean, we went down a couple of roads with food where I think to myself, okay, we know the stroopwafel. Did I say that right?
Close. You're getting better.
Stroopwafel?
Stroopwafel.
Wasn't close at all, Tom. We need my language lessons back on and stronger for the next episode. But the wide range of food and fusions, that is one thing that I will say. You eat well in the Netherlands. The wide array of fusion restaurants seems to be widely accepted in like in any metropolis. But this is a smaller city setting where I enjoyed Vietnamese food, French food, a certain amount of German food. I had some of the best Italian food I'd ever had. It seems to be a country that really does appreciate food and fine dining.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Holland's not known like France or Italy for its cuisine, for sure. But there are it's very homestyle food. It's very comfort food. And one of the things that's interesting, we didn't even touch upon in the podcast, but we did in the magazine, is we went to a town called Pella, right? And we did a podcast on Pella. We spoke to the director of Pella, Visit Pella, Pella Tourism. But I did an article about Pella food, and the town was settled in the late 1840s. And if you go there now, they still have generation upon generation passed down recipes, and there are various families who contributed recipes that literally been passed down for more than 100 years, 150 years within the family, just because it's so comforting, right, to have that homestyle food. So and one area we haven't even explored yet, but now you said talk about this, maybe we should go there, Surinamese food, which is West Indian, also a former Dutch colony in South America. Surinamese food in itself is a fusion of Indian, Caribbean flavors, some Dutch flavors. It's beautiful. I'll see if I can find a guest who can talk about that with some of my sense of knowledge, because you know what? That's something we've got to explore as well.
Or we could go to a restaurant and experience it. I mean, the studio's nice, and you have a beautiful office there, Tom, but I don't think it would kill us to get out to a good fusion restaurant the next season, would it?
If there are any restaurateurs out there who think their restaurant's a good venue, reach out. Go to DutchTheMedia.com and use the contact form. You know where to find that.
You know, Tom, you talk about Pella, and that has been a fascinating the number of times that I've looked up Pella just to understand what that Dutch village feeling is and the necessity to that community that it's there. It is very fascinating. And so I'll recommend put Pella on your visit list if you're doing a road trip, or you know, make it a destination where you can find out about this rich history and culture in America. But what it leads me to think about is the stories that you covered and the interviews you had with people about their immigration experience to Canada and to North America for a number of reasons, and what that experience was like. And that was covered off in books and film and so many different ways. Which is the one, which is the episode that you think best represented, or episodes best represented, that experience of being an immigrant from Holland?
You know, it's very hard almost to pick favorites here, because everyone's experience is unique in a way, and there's been beautiful representations about that. On a side note, and I'll get back to your question about the episode, but on a side note, I've got an interesting announcement to make. This podcast really brings a lot of context. A lot of people reach out to us, and I'm really honored, but I've been asked by the Association for the Advancement of Dutch American Studies, which is a academic organization, to come speak at their conference next year in 2025 about the Dutch immigrant experience in North America, which is exactly the topic you're just touching on. I'm asked to speak in their banquet. And it's taking place in one, not in Pella, but in one of these other Dutch American towns, Holland, Michigan. Well, the name says it all. But the conference is being held in Holland, Michigan the next year in June. And I'm sure we'll, I've actually reached out to see if they'd like to come talk on the podcast in our next season. But I just thought I'd put it out there, and they're looking for academic papers. I'm a journalist. I'm not a professor or anything. So I could speak at the banquet.
I can see you being very professorly, actually. Professorial?
Professorial, I think, yeah. But so any academics out there who want to write a paper or present a paper at the conference, they should reach out to ADAS, A-A-D-A-S. But back to your question. So what I've seen is typically people sit down and they write a memoir, and they write it for their kids and their grandkids, and this is where grandma, grandpa, opa, and oma came from. But there's been other expressions of that, and one of the ones that I thought was really special, and that really still is a very special place in my heart, is Rosemary Sloat's immigrant painting exhibition. Now, coincidentally, she'll also be in Holland, Michigan for the ADAS conference, showing her paintings which are very emotional about the homesickness of her mother and trying to make a living in Canada. And she doesn't use words, she uses images, but the most beautiful, detailed, well-presented images. And we did an episode with Rosemary, but we also did, and then that's one way of expressing it, but we also spoke to someone who wrote a children's book about the immigrant experience, Julia Sinke, in a much more recent episode. So, and then we spoke at length to this really erudite professor at Calvin University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I'm sure if he can make it, he'll be there at the conference as well, Henry Barron. And you know what? I've even got a comic book. It's not fair to say comic book. I should say graphic novel. It's not a novel.
Graphic novel, Tom, yeah.
Graphic novel, absolutely, about the Dutch immigrant experience. It's called Destination Canada. It was, and we never spoke to anyone who, any of the artists who drew it, because they took, I don't remember the exact number, I believe 16 immigrants, 16 different stories, 16 different comic artists, and they all did one story. Well, we didn't speak to any of the comic companies, but we did speak to one of the subjects of the book, and that was a younger guy from Vancouver called Irwin Oostindia, or Oostindia, and he's featured in that book that was brought out last year. So
his story is easily the perfect fodder for a graphic novel. His experience, that's one of those episodes where I found myself doing this right to the end, because what a fascinating experience that was. Overall, the immigrant experience left me with this feeling, like immigration is and has been, and even more so over the course of history, difficult. It causes mental duress and homesickness, and It makes people feel disconnected and afraid. The future sometimes when you immigrate seems like what you left behind was a better option. And so to overcome that takes strength. The strength of people that have been through war, starvation, liberation. That experience coming to Canada, coming to North America, sort of in a modern immigration sense, painted the picture of the Dutch as very strong, stoic, and able people that many societies in and cities and parts of North America were built upon and built with.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, as you say, you leave something behind, you get something new, but you got to work hard to set yourself. And and that was the Dutch in the, well, in a number of ways, but in the 17th centuries, in the 1840s, but also recently in the 1950s. And that's where a lot of the people we talk to and a lot of people that listen to us have their roots, either as children of those immigrants or as those immigrants themselves. But it wasn't easy. But let's not forget, it's not easy now either to come to a new country and establish yourself. And if you don't speak the language, don't understand the culture, I had it easy. I came here on a plane. I didn't have to come on an immigrant ship, let alone a sail ship or something like that, like hundreds of years ago. I spoke the language, I learned English at school. It was a relatively easy start. But even I come to the point where you say, well, I don't really understand what's going on around me because these people have a slightly different culture and I've got to get accustomed to that. However, how much harder must that be for someone who comes here or came here not speaking any English?
And having experienced a certain amount of trauma in their home country or the country that they're arriving from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not having been outside of their own village, town, province, you name it, right?
Yeah. And, I do want to talk a little bit about the trauma and the triumph that the Dutch have experienced in war. But I did want to touch on one other topic that I found fascinating along the way. Before we go, please stick around. A couple of very exciting announcements, one from Tom and one from me. Tom has no idea the announcement I'm about to make. If I was him, I'd be nervous, but he's such a calm guy.
I don't know about the announcement I'm supposed to make.
I think that you know me well enough to know I have your best interest at heart and the interest of the Dutch people, for goodness sake. But in that vein, one of the episodes we did I found completely fascinating because I do believe it probably is saving lives when people listen to it. And it was a medical episode, Tom, where we discovered that there was a genetic fault that made people predisposed to certain cancers. And I'm so sorry?
Heart disease.
But I'm so sorry, heart disease.
That's okay. It's lethal heart disease.
I am so sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that I found fascinating because that's where the show felt like it was making a difference.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It was one of our first season episodes. The disease is called PLN, and then a long Latin or Greek, difficult to pronounce name. But this is very important for any listeners who have not listened to that episode and joined us later, subscribe later. If you're of Dutch heritage, particularly if you're of Dutch heritage and your ancestors come from the northern part of the Netherlands, there is this genetic disease that originated somewhere in the 12th, 13th centuries and that's carried from generation to generation. It's called PLN myocard. You should have prepared me for this one. But
No, I am so sorry. I've even put the wrong disease out there.
No, all I'm saying is it's something to listen to. Because it's something you might be aware of. What you hear often is that, and what we heard in the episode, is families are not aware of this. They have this odd, strange, unexpected, at an early age, heart problem. And it's related to this this genetic mutation that it originated in the Netherlands. So if you got actually ancestors, and because this originates in the late Middle Ages, whether your ancestors came to the Netherlands or to North America in the 1600s or last year, doesn't matter. You might still carry that gene if you come from that part of the Netherlands. So yeah, thanks for raising that.
Yeah, I know in our post-show meeting, we'll overanalyze how we bungled talking about this, but it is worth going back and having a listen, even if just to understand that that kind of disease can occur, that that kind of genetic mishap can create diseases, is overall kind of a fascinating topic. I think you might find it very interesting. Tom,
what I found interesting as well is that there were pockets in North America where we know that a lot of Dutch immigrants settled, for example, around Hamilton, Ontario, where doctors, cardiologists in hospitals are specializing in this because they have so many patients. So, be aware. Groningen, Friesland, that area of the Netherlands.
It's incredible to me that, and of course, because there is that Dutch presence here, and I'm sure that certain parts of New York and Michigan, they're experiencing the same, you know, concerns. And wow, okay, well, at least now there's a handle on it that we can share the word about, and that seemed pretty important to me. Tom, I wanted to just it is sort of easy when we talk about Dutch and Canada to focus on war stories because we've done a number of them because the relationship, as you pointed out, the liberation of the Netherlands was heavily influenced and helped along by the Canadians. And so we have that core relationship and these stories come up. One of the ones that really brought color and the smells of the moment and the terror of the moment in my heart was hearing it through the eyes of what at the time was a little girl, one of the last people you'll find to be a bare eyewitness and a victim of the occupation of Holland, of the Netherlands. And that was fascinating. Please go back and listen to this episode. Encapsulate a bit of that for us, Tom.
It's called Escape from Arnhem. And Jenny Van Dinter, who we spoke to, lives in Arizona at the moment. But she was a little girl when the Battle for Arnhem took place. We all know about it, the movie A Bridge Too Far, the book with the same name that the movie is based on, Operation Market Garden, when thousands of Allied paratroopers parachuted into the area in the eastern part of the Netherlands around Arnhem and fought a battle to gain access to those bridges, keep those bridges intact across the major rivers. Ultimately, that battle failed for the Allies, and it threw threw the western part of Holland into a major crisis, a major famine that raged for 6 months, called still in the Netherlands the Hunger Winter. Jenny was a little girl, I believe she was about 8 years old, when those paratroopers started coming out of those plains, but also when this huge battle for the city of Arnhem began. And Arnhem was completely destroyed in this battle. And she lived there in the city. She had to escape, flee the city with her parents. Her dad got lost in the process. She was just with her mom and her younger sibling. They walked hundreds of miles into Holland in this, not knowing what had happened to her home, her school friends, her dad. She then had to live through that terrible hunger winter. And she tells us this story in her own words and in her own memories. And you're right, she evokes even the smells of the experience. Yes, I said Jenny. Actually, she corrected me in the episode. I remember now. I should say the Dutch way, Jenny. Jenny.
I do recall that she was so very much still in touch with those memories, and I don't think your entire life you would ever leave them behind. But her ability to share them with us in a way that was very real made it such a very special episode. Thanks, Yenny. That was very cool of you to do. And by the way, I don't want to give her age, but she was better with technology than either you and I are on an average day with the show. But look, overall, Tom, what I did learn was...
So, about the war, are you going to... because what I'd like to point out, if you don't mind, like, we had the first-hand experience from Yenny, right? But we also have to think of all those Canadian young men, it was mainly men in those days, who were sent overseas, spent 4 or 5 years overseas, and brought back those memories, those traumas, and how that influenced their children. And I thought one of the things that I was really fascinated by is that still lives in the second generation. And we talked about In Your Father's Footsteps, the tour through the Netherlands for children of Canadian veterans. And I thought I'd highlight that because that's part of the military history. We've talked a lot with the Dutch people about the occupation history and what it was like living under occupation and living through that. But through their children, we really heard about the veterans of that conflict and that were so foundational to the friendship between the Netherlands and Canada.
And imagine that there's this wave of immigration that arrives to Canada alongside the soldiers coming back. There's already a certain amount of camaraderie, I think, in place. You know, okay, we've all arrived to a safe home together. But you're right, the trauma of the experience for those soldiers is often, well, not often, but I think enough times is put aside for the triumphant victory that was the freeing and liberation of these people. But what those soldiers encountered was devastation and starvation. And that is something that will be ingrained for generations as well.
And battle, right? Losing comrades in the field, seeing awful things. Now, the interesting thing is that the immigration of the Dutch after the war almost immediately follows, because you know the first group, and we haven't spoken to anyone about this yet, might also be a topic for a future show, the first group of immigrants were the war brides, about 1,800 Dutch girls came here to join their Canadian husbands, who they'd met in those heady days of partying after the liberation.
If you couldn't get a girl after liberating that city, I'm telling you, boys.
Oh, you're touching a sore point there, Mike, that you're maybe not even aware of. But the Dutch guys, the Dutch late teens, early 20-year-old guys who'd lived through starvation, often been sent to Germany to work, which we also talked about, right, with very recently with one of our guests. Her dad had been sent to Germany for 2.5 years, and she wrote a book about it. And then there was these strapping Canadian soldiers with their chocolate and the cigarettes and everything. You know, they were no match. You know, and a different story that's also been highlighted a bit and that we haven't touched upon is, apart from those 2,000 war brides, there were a multiple of that of war babies that were born about 9 months after the liberation.
Well, I want to feel badly for that, but being a Canadian boy, it still does kind of feel like a badge of honor, to be honest with you, that they came home with us. You know, Tom, overall, the discussion of war that I heard stemmed from, well, there was so many different perspectives. The perspective of a family member that had to go and enlist, be part of the Nazi movement. And against their will, many people had that experience. We got to be able to find out a little bit more about that perspective, the perspective from a child, the perspective of what it was like after war and being here. And overall, once again, what I discovered about the Dutch in this experience and Canadians, I haven't had the experience in the U.S., but once again, a very stoic, almost untalked about friendship and determination. And what I think both countries share is a certain amount of pride in what can be accomplished in a country. And that's what I experienced as a youth here in Canada. And that's what I still continue to see in these stories that you present to us.
That's great to hear. And I'm glad we're able to do this, Mike. Let's keep it going. I've got a few very interesting guests lined up, but I'm not going to spill the beans on those. I'm looking forward to talking to them and bringing their stories to our listeners.
Tom, I don't know if I'm going to put you on the spot here, but just before we started the show today, you mentioned that we've had many beautiful connections. Please connect with us. It's really the number one reason that we do the show. So please go ahead and reach out. It makes a difference to the stories we tell and the way that we tell them and what you want to find out more about. And you give us new things we didn't know were out there to discuss. So please, we love it when you interact. But Tom, I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'm not going to request.
This was a good interaction.
Yeah, no, it's so people reach out to us, right? I talked about that how we got to the ADAS conference. But I got a really interesting email a few weeks ago from a journalist in the Netherlands who works for the Volkskrant, which is one of the large Dutch daily national newspapers, high-quality newspaper. And she has done a series in the Netherlands where every week she interviews someone who's turned 100 years old and the amazing stories these people have to tell. Well, there's one lady who lives in British Columbia in New Westminster, and she hit the international news recently because she'd broken 4 world records at the age of 100 in swimming. She participated in the BC Games, one in her age category, which happened to be the 100 to 104-year-old age category. Well, this came out and this became a news story, and this Dutch journalist said, I would like to interview this lady, but if I can find a few more 100-year-old Dutch immigrants to Canada, my boss might actually pay for my trip across to visit with Betty Brussel, which is the name of the world champion, and who happens to also be a reader of our Dutch newspaper. And lo and behold, I helped the journalist out. I put out some feelers. I contacted a few people, put her in touch with a few locations and seniors' homes. She found 5 100-year-old Dutch immigrants. So she's coming over in the summer of this year. She's coming over in September to interview them. And she said, please, if you find any more, let me know. The more, the merrier. So if anyone here is listening to this podcast and knows someone, a Dutch immigrant, who's 100 years old, somewhere in Canada, let us know. DutchTheMedia.com contact form, and I'll make the introduction with the Dutch journalist, and hopefully we'll be able to connect with even more than those 5.
You know, Tom, I think that starting your seniors dating service is going to go swimmingly. I can see what you're doing here. You're trying to make some love connections for our Dutch senior community. Like that's wonderful. This is a fascinating thing. That's the other thing. I think that maybe I'm wrong about this. The Dutch seem to have longevity. Many of us do not. So long live Tom Byfoot and long live the podcast. By the way, congratulations, Tom. The podcast will be presented on Spotify in full video, starting with the new season of shows, by request from Spotify. So thank you so much for doing that, everybody. That's how you get your video on there. And so not just on YouTube, not just at Dutch Media, but if you subscribe on Spotify, you can watch our beautiful faces every episode as well. So there you go, Tom. A little surprise for you.
Fantastic. I didn't know that. That's brand new news to me. Thanks, Mike. That's really, really exciting.
It's inspiration for me to comb my hair. maybe I'll get a bow tie and dress up to do these shows. But I'll tell you this, I am looking forward to, in many great ways, what's going to happen in the next season of shows, because if the last 24 are any indication, the journey ahead in the next year will bring some great stories and introduce some amazing people, all that revolve around Dutch culture and the Netherlands. Tom, thanks so much for a great season, and I look forward to catching you in the next one.
Well, thanks for sharing your insight on the Dutch, Mike. I thought it was a great conversation.
I thought it was Hollanders. Ah, anyway, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend, reach out to us, DutchTheMedia.com. Thanks, Tom. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mike.